Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and there's Charles W. Chuck Bryan over there, and this is Stuff You Should Know, the Delicia Dish.
The Delicia Dish. If you hear my dogs barking, I'm sorry, they will not shut up.
I really don't hear them.
Well,
I can't see them either.
I know, I can hear them, always. They're very barky.
It's the Sheltie in them.
Yeah, we house at our friend's dog, you know, Scotty. Scotty's dog, Benny, came over for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. While Aren't he was they on like honeymoon. Best friends?
You know, Benny, they kind of just coexist.
Oh, really? Okay.
We kind of joke that he didn't know how to be a dog. Benny learned how to be a dog while he was here.
Oh, yeah.
A little bit, being around our guys for 2 weeks. But Scotty got married, by the way. So congratulations,
oh,
Scotty and Lily.
Oh, my gosh. Congratulations, Scotty. I got to send him like an ice cream maker or something.
And I got to officiate my first wedding, which was fun.
What is going on?
Yeah, it was a lot, I really, really enjoyed it. Quite an honor.
So that explains why you went through catechism.
That's right.
I finally get it now.
Yeah, so they got married, went on their honeymoon for 2 weeks. We had Benny, but I don't know why I started with that. Oh, Benny doesn't bark because Benny does know how to be a dog. But he learned how to bark while he was here.
Man, that's not something you want your dog to learn.
Because I have the barkingest dogs of all time.
He said, oh, that's that. Okay, I've heard of that before. That's fascinating. Let me try.
But it has nothing to do with cookies.
No, but everything henceforth in this episode will have to do with cookies.
Yeah, and I'm baking cookies tonight, by the way. Thank you.
Restarting researching this, I was like, I'm baking cookies too. And I want to give a huge shout out to Sally's Baking Addiction, whose brown butter chocolate chip cookie recipe is hands down the finest example of a chocolate chip cookie I've ever encountered in my life.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. I mean, like, days later, still chewy.
Mm.
Amazing stuff. And it's worth the little extra effort in making brown butter. Just totally worth it. I can't overstate how good that recipe is.
So you're not one of those weirdos that likes a good crisp chocolate chip cookie?
It's a little bit crispy on the edges, a little bit chewy in the middle. It's a balance of everything. But I can go either way. It's got to be like a pretty lousy chocolate chip cookie for me to not want it, you know?
Yeah, I'll take a crispy one. But boy, that the fresh out of the oven kind that like folds down like a hot slice of New York pizza.
Yes, dude. I actually went and purchased actual cow's milk to drink while I ate these cookies. It was that special.
Whole milk?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there were like chunks of fat just knocking around at the top of the milk bottle.
We're going to talk a lot about the cookies we like and don't like in here and what makes certain cookies great, of course. But I guess we should just go a little bit with the history and the fact that a cookie is, you know, it's sort of like a cake, but the ratio of ingredients is different in that with a cake, you end up with what's called batter. Mm-hmm. And with cookie, you end up with what's called dough because of the ratio of your ingredients.
Yeah. And also sometimes the ingredients themselves can differ. But if there's any other baked good that a cookie resembles most closely, it's probably a cake. And in fact, I think the Cambridge and Collins dictionaries both define cookies as sweet, usually round, flat cakes, which it seems sensible. But when you really dig into it, you're like, this actually doesn't fully hold up.
Yeah, a cookie's a cookie.
Yeah, because a cake, if you want to get, you know, jiggy with it. A cookie is its own thing. You hold a cookie, you eat it with your hand. It's a self-contained mm-hmm. thing. A cookie is just one cookie, and you can eat multiple cookies. But a cake is like one big unit that you cut into subunits called slices, mm-hmm. and you usually eat it with a fork. So a cookie is not a cake, and don't call it that ever again.
Right, unless it's a cupcake, also not even close to a cookie.
That's right. But you do eat that with your hand, which kind of undermines that whole idea that a cookie is just a dessert you eat with your hand.
It's a hand cake.
I guess so, but isn't that really a cupcake, not a cookie?
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. A cupcake is a hand cake.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Well, then we're on the same page finally.
It's also not a bread, even though you might hear gingerbread or shortbread, mm-hmm. Bread as we know. And, you know, cookies kind of come from all of this tradition of bread baking and biscuit making and stuff like that in a way. Mm-hmm. But gingerbreads and shortbreads, they don't have leavening agents like bread does. They're not going to rise like a bread is supposed to rise. Mm-hmm. And bread flour has got usually more gluten going on in it.
Yeah, I mean, like if you look at cookie dough and then you look at bread dough, it's like two totally different things.
Yeah, two different things.
So not really a bread, not really a cake. So you might say a pastry. It's a pastry. Nope, wrong again, because pastries at their base usually have some sort of flour, some sort of fat, and then water. And it's
I didn't see water.
Yeah.
I looked up a bunch of pastry recipes, croissants and danishes.
Water.
And I didn't see water in any of them.
Put water in all of them.
None of them had water
it's
in the recipe.
It's implied in the recipe. Just work with me.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's so universally known that you put water in pastries that they don't even include it in the recipe.
The one recipe I did say that I saw that had water was a bear claw.
Really?
Yeah, like a bear claw.
A croissant doesn't have water in it.
Not the recipes I saw.
That's really interesting. So a lot of people do say cookies are a type of pastry. I've seen elsewhere that that's not the case.
No, it's a cookie.
So I came up with a definition of cookies, if I may share it myself, Chuck.
Sure.
A cookie is, quote, and I'm quoting myself here, so I don't know if it's right to actually say, quote, mm-hmm. a usually small, often round, usually flat, handheld dessert consisting of at least flour, a fat like oil or butter, and sugar. And that, friends, is probably the greatest definition of cookie anyone's ever put to paper.
The only issue I would take is usually round, because I've seen a lot of shaped cookies, but...
But that's why I said usually.
Okay.
What would you say? Sometimes round? Frequently round?
I might bump that up to often.
I said often round.
I thought you said usually.
No, usually small, often round, usually flat.
Okay. All right. Sure.
Oh boy.
I like it.
Okay, great. So we've got the definition of cookies, and I appreciate you indulging me because I really did kind of wade through a lot of the internet to come to put that together. But there was something in there that's really important too, which is sugar. And you think, well, yeah, of mm-hmm. course sugar. Cookies are sweet. Well, there's other things you can sweeten cookies with besides sugar. Like you got molasses cookies, you got honey cookies. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different cookies you can make. But if you dig into those recipes, you're going to find they still use sugar. And sugar is an extremely important ingredient, as we'll see. A lot of people say basically cookies didn't exist until sugar came along.
Yeah. Depending on where you are in the world, they're going to call them different things. If you watch Ted Lasso, you're going to know they call them biscuits in England, mm-hmm. And also Australia. Mm-hmm. In Spain, they're geladas.
Yeah.
The Germans call them keks. I don't know what that Christmas cookie, I don't even know how to pronounce that.
Well, you took German. You don't know? I was going to ask you.
I don't know, man. That's five consonants to start the word.
Please, chin.
P-L-Z-C-H-E-N. I would say it's probably like plechin or something.
Okay.
But again, no vowels in the beginning of that, in most of that word.
Yes. What about Italy?
Oh, you're talking about the biscotti?
Very nice. Yeah, which you can find wrapped in a little jar at your local coffee place.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of biscotti.
It really depends. But no, for the most part, I'm not, which it's a good thing we're not alive in like the 14th or 15th century because we wouldn't have had many options. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get it. That almondy taste is fine, but if I'm going to burn calories on a cookie, it's not going to be a biscotti.
I gotcha.
Know what I mean?
So the word cookie itself, Chuck, comes from the Dutch, mm-hmm. who have the word?
Koekje, K-O-E-K-J-E right. means small or little cake, once again.
Right. So that's there's a lot of different words for cookies. That's the point. But cookies are their own thing. And over thousands of years, people have said, these are great. I like this. I'm going to contribute to humanity's understanding of baking by creating this cookie and that cookie. And now, finally, we're living in what I consider the pinnacle of the age of cookies, because I can't imagine we're going to come up with better cookies that aren't just variations of what we have now. I feel like we've invented all of the great cookies, and that really, if you dig into it, most of the greatest ones, the apex, the pinnacle of them, were created here in the good old U.S. of A.
Agreed, but not the first cookies, because we're a young country.
Yeah.
And most people say that cookies have been around since Persia, around 7th century CE. They had sugar for a while, and they had been making cakes and things like that. You had to be, you know, pretty wealthy, and that's a sort of a repeated thing you'll see in here as far as the early days of sugar being available. Mm-hmm. You had to have pretty much a lot of money and be part of royalty or at least super wealthy to eat these sweet confections.
Yeah.
But at some point, there was a Persian baker who said, all right, I got to test out, I'm making a cake. I want to see if this oven's ready. We don't have thermometers or anything like that. So let me just throw a little bit of this, I guess, dough in there and see what happens. And it came out, this little baby cake, and tasted awesome. And so whatever accents the Persians might have used said, this is fantastic. Let me keep doing this. I've discovered a new thing.
Yeah, they said, like, why don't I just make a batch of test cakes only? And that cookie was born. That's the story. It's not entirely clear if that's true. It's spread all over the internet, and not just in, like, the copy-paste way. Like, it does seem to be that food historians tend to think, like, that's possibly what happened. But even if that is true, it ignores a lot of the previous evolution that led to cookies that came before the Persians.
Yeah, and, you know, we kind of mentioned this early. You know, it comes from the tradition of baking bread, of course, something that we've been doing for 14,000 years.
Yeah.
But those have those leavening agents. The Mediterraneans used honey, and they made these honey pastries for a long, long time. The Russians made these cookies called pryniks.
Something like
that.
Yeah. Have you ever had one?
No, have you?
I don't know.
Okay. They're made from honey, rye flour, and berries, and those go back to 4th century BCE.
Yeah.
And then we have our good old biscuits.
Yeah, which are, they seem to kind of have evolved from the Romans, who created something called rusk, which is, you know what you don't like about biscotti?
Yeah.
Take away anything even remotely likable about biscotti, and you've got rusk.
Where yeah, it's like hardtack, right?
It was a hardtack, what like the Navy's adopted and uses hardtack. And the reason that I think it was initially created was because the Roman soldiers who were going further and further afield, conquering all these different lands, they were supplied with this rusk as rations. Because what they would do is they would bake bread, and then they would cut the bread into pieces, and they would bake it again, which would remove almost all of the water content, all the moisture content from it. And you'd still have the nutrients, but none of the moisture, which means that it would stay keep for a very long time. Like it wouldn't mold because it didn't have any water to create mold.
Yeah. I mean, when you hear that story, you're like, why would they purposefully just keep baking it and making it taste worse and worse?
Right.
But it was just a necessity for rations.
It was like preserving it, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's the name for that baking process, right?
That's right. Biscotto from Italian means twice baked.
Yep.
And that's where you get biscotti.
Yeah. Not only is that where you get biscotti, Chuck, that's also where you get biscuits, what the UK and Australia and New Zealand and a few other places refer to their cookies as, biscuits. That's a derivation of biscotto.
That's right.
Pretty neat.
This is making me nothing but hungry.
That's okay, because there's plenty of cookies in your future. I can see it now. And I also see, Chuck, in our future, an ad break happening this
That's
minute.
That's very nice. I saw that coming. Stuff you should know.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball, and you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
You know, Chuck, the first cell phone was demonstrated all the way back in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated?
What's that?
Shared plans.
Interesting. You know, over 50 years later, you can save on one line now thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included.
Yeah, that's true. No hidden fees. Really. And you can save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. It's 2024, so get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should know.
Okay. So, as we said, most food historians who think about these kind of things say, yeah, it was Persia. Persia is the place where cookies were kind of invented. And the reason you can't really argue with that is because if you are of European ancestry or live in a country that was founded through European colonization, there's a pretty good chance that all of the cookies that you've ever been exposed to came after the introduction of sugar and cookies and spices by the Persians to the Europeans through the Crusades.
That's right. The Crusades happen, and anytime there's a conquering nation, one thing is for sure going to happen, and they are going to spread. They're going to find all the delicious, wonderful things that that culture does, mm-hmm. and they're going to steal them and take them back to their homelands, mm-hmm. and that's how things spread throughout the world, and that's what happened with cookies.
Yeah, and sugar.
That's right. So it started in these Arab countries, and they said, let's bring back the ginger and cinnamon and cardamom and the sugar and all this delicious stuff, and let's start making our own cookies.
Yeah, and then one of the reasons why all of this stuff was in Persia at the time, Chuck, is not just because the Persians had already started cultivating sugar. They had easy access to it. But they had access to things like ginger, too, like you said, which came from Asia. Or East Asia, I should say. And the reason that they had access to this is because they were pretty well located along the Silk Road. Mm-hmm. But Europe, and especially Western Europe, was located very far off of the Silk Road. So even though this stuff was pretty commonly traded further east, you could not get it in Europe unless you were one of the most fabulously wealthy people on the planet at the time.
Yeah, and, you know, as time crept on a little bit, there was a little more access to things like sugar, but it was still kind of like a special occasion thing. You didn't necessarily have to be super wealthy, but it wasn't like all of a sudden the working class of Europe was all of a sudden just baking cookies all the time.
Right.
But that did give birth to a tradition, which is if it's a special occasion thing, like, oh, I don't know, Christmas time, mm-hmm. then that became a tradition, is making cookies and handing out cookies to neighbors, because you're not going to bake a bunch of cakes and deliver 35 cakes to your neighbors.
No.
Because that's a waste. But what you could do, like our old friend Mona Collentine used to do with us.
Man, that was
but
so
she
great.
Stopped.
Yeah.
I don't think she listens anymore anyway.
She'll never hear this, but it was really nice. Like, I mean, maybe 10 or 12 different varieties every year. Big box of them. It was great.
It was great. But that's where that tradition comes from, around Christmas time, mm-hmm. on special occasions, baking batches of cookies and sharing them with friends and neighbors.
Yeah, because they were splurging to show off for baby Jesus.
Sure, that's what you do.
So one of the things I came across, though, was that a family in medieval Europe or Middle Age Europe baking cookies around the holidays were probably breaking the law because the trade guilds were really powerful at the time. And among those trade guilds were the bakers' guilds, who had managed to get laws enacted that said you can't even bake for yourself in your own home. You have to buy your baked goods from a baker who's a member of a trade guild, a trained baker. And apparently everybody said nuts to that. We're not going to listen to that. And over the course of a century or two, that kind of enforcement went away because who doesn't want to bake in their own home, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a union guy, but I draw the line at some point, you know?
Yeah. Baking in your own home is that line.
Yeah. And it literally became the will of the people. And they were just like, no, we're not doing this anymore. We got to bake at home. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the first recipes and some of the first cookbooks in North America were cookie recipes.
Yeah, and not just that. Like, even earlier than that, there was cookbooks that came out in, like, the 16th century, the early 17th century, and they started having cookie recipes in them and cake recipes in them. And the reason why, one of the reasons why, was because the European powers had started to colonize places where you could grow sugar. Because people had gotten a little taste of sugar and the demand was so great that they went out and actually conquered new areas so that they could grow sugar, which lowered the prices of sugar, which meant that the average household was way more likely to be able to afford it in, say, like the 16th or 17th or probably 18th century. And that, as a result, led to these cookbooks coming up. Like there's one called The Good Huswife's Jewel, Chuck.
Did you say housewife?
No, huswife's.
What is that? Just, I guess, a variation of a...
I guess an old-timey English way to put it.
H-U-S wife.
But if you look at, there's a recipe for fine cakes in there. And if you look at it, you're like, how did anybody produce anything like this? Like, we expect extremely precise recipes these days when you open a cookbook.
But, well, for baking especially.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's a science experiment. It's a chemical reaction you're doing with baking. Cooking is a little more like an art, right? So with The Good Huswife's Jewel, with the recipe for fine cakes, you could find ingredients like take 2 or 3 yolks of eggs and a good quantity of sugar.
Yeah.
And I think each one was signed like, good luck.
Yeah, figure it out.
Yeah. But apparently people got it right enough of the time that these things really started to take off and people would bake cookies more and more.
Yeah, we mentioned shortbreads earlier. That came from Scotland. Mm-hmm. And the name shortbread might sound a little weird, but it was sort of a hybrid. It basically means crumbly cookie. Yeast was swapped out for butter and sugar was added in when they had this leftover bread and these hard biscuits. And it became shortbread, and they used short meant crumbly, so that's where the crumbly comes from. Mm-hmm. And there was a tax on biscuits. And then the Scottish Heritage site says that they called it bread to get around the tax on biscuits. Yeah. So that's the only reason it's called shortbread.
They're like,
that's basically a cookie. Should have been called crumbly cookie.
Exactly. Yeah. Some tax collector's like, that's a cookie. And they said, no, it's a bread. It's a shortbread. Be quiet.
Yeah. That got me looking into the etymology of how the cookie crumbles.
Oh, yeah.
And it was one of those sort of disappointing ones where they just said, like, mid, like 1940s, 1950s America.
Okay. Not Scotland in the 18th century?
Yeah, it couldn't be traced back to like a specific person. It basically, some people said it might have come from like C'est la vie in France. Mm-hmm. But I just love that line in The Apartment, in Billy Wilder's The Apartment. Mm-hmm. He says it a couple of times. He says, that's how it crumbles cookie-wise. Instead of that's how the cookie crumbles.
Who said that? Was it Jack Lemmon?
Jack Lemmon said that, yeah. That's just a nice little turn of phrase by Billy Wilder. Good stuff.
Man, I ended up watching Casablanca the other night. It just happened to be on, and I caught it toward the beginning. Uh-huh. It really is maybe the greatest movie ever made. It is amazingly good. I liked it during my James Dean, like Humphrey Bogart teenage phase. But as an adult watching it, I haven't seen it in many, many years. It's astounding how good it is. The acting, the writing, the directing, the lighting.
It's crazy.
What?
I need to do it.
Chuck, you will like it. It is such a good movie. I can't imagine anybody's ever seen Casablanca and been like, that sucked.
Probably so. Have you seen The Apartment?
No, I never have.
All right, well.
I'll trade you.
You got to see that. Okay. That was on Movie Crush. That was our good friend Scott Aukerman. That was his movie pick.
The Apartment or Casablanca?
The Apartment. And Scott is such a pro and such a sweetheart. He rewatched the movie and like reread like multiple chapters of Billy Wilder's book in preparation for that episode. That's what a pro he is.
And designed an original movie poster for it.
Yeah. Did he sign for me?
That's nice. That's good stuff. Sounds like Scott Aukerman.
Yeah.
So,
all right, shortbread is where we were.
Yeah,
crumbling cookies.
Well, we were talking, I think the point we were trying to get across is that, like, the Europeans had, like, a bonanza, a golden age of cookie development after sugar became widely available. Starting in the 1500s, 1600s, 1700s. And so you've got shortbread created in Scotland. Macaroon was created way earlier in Italy, but it spread its way to France, and then England got its hands on
the macaron.
Right, the macaroon.
Different.
The coconutty kind that's crispy on the outside and very chewy on the inside, and it's kind of like a ball almost.
Yeah, not a fan.
Oh, I like them. I like them.
I like a macaron.
I like a macaron too. I don't really discriminate. Like, it has to be, again, it's got to be a pretty bad cookie. Usually it's got to be a mass-produced industrialized cookie. If somebody cooked it at home, I'm probably going to like it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm with you.
And then gingerbread cookies too, Chuck. They made their first appearance in the 15th century.
Yeah, so we mentioned Greece coming over from China, but the cookie itself, I believe, started in Greece about 2400 BCE. Mm-hmm. And in medieval England preserved ginger was what gingerbread was called. Mm-hmm. But that's not like the dessert that we're talking about. The dessert is, you know, is that delicious sort of molasses gingery cookie that eventually they started making into people shapes because of Queen Elizabeth I. When dignitaries would visit, she would have cookies shaped like them.
I think that was different
in tribute. And that's how they came to be made.
I think that was Terry shapes. Gilliam you just did, actually.
I think, didn't we, on a Christmas episode, do something on gingerbread houses or gingerbread men?
Yeah, I think we did. It may have been our live one that we did in 2018.
Oh.
I'll have to look. Remember, we've got the handy list of everything we've ever done on Christmas episodes.
That's right. It's very nice of you to keep up with that. Yeah.
So you want to take a break and then talk about cookies coming to their rightful place where they will truly enter their true golden age, America?
USA. Yes.
That's right. We should insert like a bald eagle scream here.
Oh, man, we should.
We'll be right back. Stuff you should
know. Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep. Lift your head up and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
You know, Chuck, the first cell phone was demonstrated all the way back in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated?
What's that?
Shared plans.
Interesting. You know, over 50 years later, you can save on one line now thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included.
Yeah, that's true. No hidden fees.
Really. And you can save on wireless with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. It's 2024, so get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
Learning stuff with Joshua and Charles. Stuff you should know.
So one of the reasons all the people, Chuck, who are like, stop talking about how great America and its cookies are. One of the reasons why our cookies are so great is because America has always been a melting pot of immigrants coming from all these different places. And one of the things that all these immigrants brought with them were their cookies and their cookie ideas, their cookie traditions. And all that stuff got blended together and it inspired people to come up with new stuff too. And now we have even better cookies, but they improved upon the traditions of the immigrants who came here in the first place.
That's right. And depending on where you go in the United States today, you're going to see traces of those original immigrant populations and the cookies that they brought by probably how popular the cookies in that region still are today. If you go to the Midwest, maybe, I don't know, Michigan, Ohio, you might eat a pizzle.
I think it's Pizzelle.
Pizzelle?
I think so, yeah. That's what I remember people calling it in Toledo.
Okay, they're probably like, oh my God, Chuck, it's you screwed that one up.
It's like a pizza is a round, flat thing. A pizzelle is like a little round, flat thing, basically.
All right.
But it's not like pizzelle? A pizza. Have you ever had one?
Yeah, I think so. It's like a little waffle, but not a stroop waffle.
Yes, no, it's like a waffle. It's a little thicker than a stroop waffle part. It's almost like a crispier, doughier funnel cake that's much thinner and flatter. And it's often flavored with anise, and it can be really good, but it can also be really dry and not good.
Yeah, but it's made in a little, like, waffle-y iron mold.
Yes, I think it's one of those things where you really want to eat a pizzelle, like, fresh out of the iron.
Would I call it a pitzel?
Pitzel.
Yeah, that's not right. I knew that wasn't right.
It's a pitzel cookie.
I believe that the Scottish shortbreads eventually became tea cakes here in the South, which can be a thing, evidently. I haven't had a lot of tea cakes, but I think it's, like, part of the old sort of Southern tradition.
Yeah. And like you said too, Chuck, I mean, like, Americans were cool with cookies from the earliest stages of the country. The first ever cookbook that was written by an American, printed in America, was printed in 1796. It's called American Cookery by Amelia Simmons. And she had a bunch of different cookie recipes in there.
She did. She had a few gingerbread cookie recipes. I think one reportedly is by George Washington's mother.
Mm-hmm.
And all kinds of fun names. Kinkawoodles.
Yeah.
Or how about a tangle breech?
I like that one. That's pretty good. What about Plunkets or Crybabies?
Crybaby sounds pretty good.
It is, but that's also the name of that little, you remember the Sugar Daddy bar?
The Sugar Daddy bar.
It's like a very, very chewy, I don't know what it's supposed to be. Okay, so they cut those into little kind of rabbit poop size pieces, and I think coated them with chocolate and called those Sugar Babies. No, they're not coated in chocolate, which I think is a failing. So that's what I always associate with Crybabies, even though they're called Sugar Babies.
Okay.
Either that or that Johnny Depp, John Waters movie of the 90s.
Yeah, Crybaby.
Or the
good
80s.
Jolly Boys, that was another cookie name for Metal Cookbook. Yeah. These are kind of fun. Yeah. Snickerdoodle, not in there.
No, and apparently Snickerdoodle has some sort of German derivation, but I'm not sure about that. One thing I found researching cookies, Chuck, is that there's a lot of contradictory information out there.
Sure.
You just kind of have
to choose. We invented this?
Yeah.
No, exactly. We invented it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Snickerdoodle is sort of a play on the sugar cookie, as is the ice sugar cookie, which is the only kind of sugar cookie I like.
Oh, yeah.
It's the iced one.
You don't like Snickerdoodles, huh?
I'd consider that a Snickerdoodle. I'm just talking about a standard sugar cookie. I like a Snickerdoodle, sure.
Okay. Yeah. I like
it. And it's a sugar cookie, but I meant like the plain white sugar cookies.
Yeah, no, it's almost like you're kind of like, well, you didn't finish. There's no frosting on here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So, yeah, a little, if you're ever just hard up for something like that, just some like regular break and bake sugar cookies and like a tub of vanilla frosting is all you need to just recreate a world of wonder for yourself.
But yeah, you said the Snickerdoodle and the sugar cookie, I think, came from German immigrants, the Moravians in Pennsylvania, very famous for their stars as mm-hmm. well. We have a Moravian Star Light, which I'm a big fan of.
Mm-hmm.
But they were called Nazareth sugar cookies because of Nazareth, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, or some people call them Amish sugar cookies. And some people say, well, why wouldn't they just call them Moravian sugar cookies? Because that would be too confusing. Because we can also thank our friends, the Amish or the Moravians, the group who moved to North Carolina, for inventing the Moravian spice cookie, which is a very crispy, very thin little cookie. Made with molasses and ginger and cinnamon that you have around the holidays.
Yeah, it's close to gingerbread, but crispier and thinner.
Yes, and that was an American-made cookie as well. So both the sugar cookie and the Moravian spice cookie were invented by the same sect of German Protestants who arrived in Pennsylvania and North Carolina, respectively. Mind-blowing.
Very cool. We got to talk about the state cookie of New Mexico, the bizcochito.
Mm-hmm.
This was brought in by the Spanish colonists, sort of co-developed by the Pueblo people there in areas like New Mexico, what we now call New Mexico.
Yeah.
And bizcocho means cakes in Spanish, so bizcochito means little cakes.
Yeah, and bizcocho should be like, oh, yeah, it's kind of like biscotto, which it is. It's derived from that as well.
Like a biscotti.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all cognates.
I have not had a bizcochito cookie yet in my life.
I haven't either.
But I plan to. Cinnamon and anise sounds like a very winning combination.
Yeah, I looked them up on the internet. They look tasty.
They do. They definitely do. But then I propose that it's maybe the most famous cookie of all. Would you agree or disagree? Am I overstating things?
No, I think the chocolate chip cookie is the, at least from our view, the most famous cookie of all time.
Okay, so that cookie is one of those few origin stories that you can say definitively, this person did this, and this is when they did it. And no, there's not some other person out there who says that they were the ones who did it, and there's some evidence that they may have done it 3 years earlier. That's not the case. The chocolate chip cookie was invented by a woman named Ruth Wakefield in Whitman, Massachusetts, possibly in 1930, maybe 1931. Apparently, she didn't remember exactly when she did it, but she mm-hmm. is the person who invented the chocolate chip cookie. And what's awesome about it is she invented it by accident.
And where was it?
At the Toll House Inn.
The Toll House Inn.
Mm-hmm.
There you are, everyone. She was baking. She needed baker's chocolate. She didn't have any. That's that unsweetened chocolate that gives, you know, like fudge and cake a lot of flavor and the color. And she said, I don't have any of that. So I got the semi-sweet chocolate. I'm going to chunk it up real good. And when she put it in there, she found that those chunks did not just melt and become a part of the entire cookie. Mm-hmm. They held their shape and they came out like little chocolate chips because of that lower cocoa butter content. And bing, bang, boom, chocolate chip cookie.
Yeah. And she served them anyway. I guess she tried one. It was like, this is pretty boss. And they became like an instant hit at the Toll House Inn. So it was called the Toll House Cookie. And I guess word spread enough that, I don't know, she approached Nestle or Nestle approached her, but they struck a deal that they could print her recipe for Toll House cookies using semi-sweet chocolate chips on their bags of semi-sweet chocolate chips, that her her cookie recipe was now helping to move pretty good in exchange for a lifetime of free chocolate.
Bad deal.
She said she apparently thought it was just fine. So,
yeah.
She actually did end up cashing in. She sold her, fully sold all of her rights to the Toll House cookie, what we call the chocolate chip cookie, to Nestle. I think, I don't remember exactly when she did that, but they had it until like 1983 and then lost the rights, Chuck.
Yeah. I mean, I think at a certain point, it was just like, sorry, this belongs to the world.
Yeah, there was
you can't own this anymore.
I saw a 1978 poll that said that more people associated the term Toll House with cookies or chocolate chip cookies in general than they did with Nestle or any of its products. That was not the case for me. I always called chocolate chip cookies a chocolate chip cookie. Did you ever call them Toll House cookies?
Nope, chocolate chip cookies.
That was a weird poll, or people who were polled in this weird poll were very weird back in 78.
Agreed. Although I don't remember, maybe we did say that when I was seven.
I don't remember it at all.
I mean, a TV commercial said it, but that didn't count.
But that was a commercial for the Nestle bag of chips. They were Toll House chips. That's what I always thought of them as. Man, do you remember the butterscotch chips? I would just eat an entire bag of those things by myself. Just right out of the bag.
Yeah. I mean, peanut butter chips, butterscotch chips, if you throw a little, the plain M&Ms.
Mm.
Those are all good variations, but your classic chocolate chip cookie is just a hands down winner.
Yeah. And in particular, Sally's Baking Addiction's brown butter chocolate chip cookie.
America also birthed the peanut butter cookie and the brownie, the oatmeal raisin cookie. Can we skip to brownie real quick and talk about that?
Sure.
Bit of pedantism.
Yeah. Because I'm sure some people are like, brownies aren't cookies.
Well, that's me. I just...
Oh, really?
It's one of those things where it feels like a pedantic argument to call a brownie a cookie. Technically, it's a pan cookie, but to me, a brownie is a brownie.
Okay.
And if someone comes up, I think it's the other way around, is to say, no, a brownie's a brownie, is to say, no, technically brownies are cookies.
Well, yeah. I mean, if anybody says it to you, just say, hey, you want a brownie? And that just takes care of that.
Exactly. Why talk about it? Just eat it.
Right. But the point is this, is a brownie is, I'm just not letting this pass by. A brownie is a type of cookie. It's a bar cookie that a lemon bar is a bar cookie. A Nanaimo is a bar cookie. I'm pretty sure I'm saying that right. And it's just a cookie where you take the batter and you build it, you bake it in a single mass and then cut it into squares rather than baking them individually. But it's still a cookie.
Not to me, it's not.
That's fine. That's totally fine. I couldn't not explain it further. But
the consistency is different to me. The little flaky top is different. It's just all different.
Okay.
Brownie.
Well, let me ask you this, Chuck. Mm-hmm. What about a chocolate chip brownie that is nothing more than a square, slightly thicker chocolate chip cookie?
No, do you mean a pan-baked chocolate chip cookie?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's not a brownie. That's a pan-baked chocolate chip cookie.
But it looks exactly like a brownie.
It's the same shape, but it has different consistency and doesn't have that flaky top.
So to you, just the brownie is its own thing?
Yeah.
Okay, what about a lemon bar?
It's a lemon bar.
Okay. I can get with you on both of those, actually, but...
I mean, that's just, you know, again, this is a pedantic argument that no one should ever have.
Those are my favorite kind.
What you should do is just sit down, eat those cookies, eat those brownies, eat those bar brownie cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Throw some ice cream on top, some hot fudge, some whipped cream.
Put a lemon bar on there.
I'm not a big lemon bar guy.
Oh, I like them, but they have to be totally by themselves. You wouldn't mix that with anything.
No, I'm not a big fan of lemon cookies either. Mm. Like lemony sweets aren't my favorite.
I gotcha. I love them. I feel like how if you take your likes and my likes and my dislikes and your dislikes and put us together, we form a fully formed whole person, yeah. You know?
We would like everything.
Everything. So, Chuck, there's a couple of other kinds of cookies we need to shout out real quick. The cutout cookie where you roll them out and cut them out. That's why they're called that. Like a Christmas sugar cookies are often cutout cookies.
Those are fun. I don't love to eat those as much. Like a Christmas-shaped cookie with the sprinkles on top.
Mm-hmm.
Not my favorite. I'm sort of a dropped cookie
mm-hmm.
purist.
Yeah, drop cookies are kind of like a chocolate chip cookie where you like scoop them out by the spoonful and drop that mound on there, and they kind of spread and flatten out as they bake, producing a round, flat dessert treat.
That's right. And by the way, brownies, we know the just the origin story.
What?
Fanny Farmer in 1905 mm-hmm. invented the brownie.
Mm-hmm.
There's a story that a housewife in Maine forgot baking powder in their chocolate cake and it became a brownie.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in like some cooking encyclopedias. Not true, because that was in 1912 and Fanny Farmer's recipe was printed in 1905.
Yeah, and Fanny Farmer actually did a lot more than just invent the brownie. She also is credited for inventing the oatmeal raisin cookie too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she's very prolific.
See, here's my deal. I listened to a Judge John Hodgman the other day, and Jesse Thorne, our friend and bailiff of that show, called raisins a BS addition to any sweet treat, which I generally agree, but I like an oatmeal raisin cookie, and I'm not the biggest raisin guy.
A good one, for sure, but that's pretty much the limit of raisins in desserts, unless it's just a fistful of raisins.
The great Clint Eastwood movie.
That's right. They were really scraping the bottom of the barrel.
What about the icebox cookie?
So those came along after the invention of the icebox, obviously, but usually you take the dough and you roll it into a log.
Yeah.
Chill it, and then you cut it into slices, and those slices are baked as cookies.
Yeah, if you look at a pinwheel cookie, that swirly shape mm-hmm. comes because it's rolled up and chilled.
Or the logs of like ready-to-bake cookie dough you find in like the dairy aisle, that's an icebox cookie technically.
I disagree, because that's not rolled flat. That's just a big tube.
So, no, it's not rolled flat. A pinwheel cookie's not rolled flat either. It's rolled into like a tube, a cylinder, and then you cut the cylinder into slices.
No, it's rolled flat, and then it's rolled. So it's got rings, like the rings of a tree.
I see what you're saying. I gotcha. Yeah, I think the final product and the fact that it's a tube in the fridge makes it an icebox cookie.
All right.
That's not just me saying that either.
You got your classic sandwich cookie, which everything from an Oreo to a macaron to those great Ritz, peanut butter Ritz chocolate dip things that Emily's grandmother used to make.
Those are really good.
Who, by the way, is turning 101 this year. I'm not on Facebook anymore, but Mary's turning 101 in a couple of weeks.
Hey, you ditched Facebook, huh? Good for you, Jack.
Yeah, I deleted my account. I was out of there.
That is what they call mental health.
I didn't miss it at all.
No? Did it take any kind of transition period for you?
You know, the only thing I miss that was actually genuinely hard was the Movie Crush page and the Movie Crushers page. Those were awesome, and it was a great community. It is a great community, I hope, still. But that was the hardest part to leave, because I really, really enjoyed my interactions there. It was a very kind little corner of the internet. But having said that, it was all for my well-being. So I had to let that go even. Yeah. So anyway, Mary's 101 soon. Want to let the Stuff You Should Know Army that. I'm glad that came up, actually, because she's not doing the best here at 101, but she's hanging in there.
Well, a super duper Hooper, happy birthday to you, Mary. 101, that is amazing.
1920.
That is really impressive.
But back to sandwich cookies. You also got your Stroop waffle.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned the macaron.
Yeah.
You got the Malamars. You got your moon pies.
What about Oreos?
Yeah, it's classic.
Apparently, the Whoopie pie is the original sandwich cookie, and that we can thank our Amish friends for as well. Supposedly, the name came from Amish workers on job sites going, whoopee, when they opened their lunch pail and found a whoopee pie inside.
Yeah, I like a whoopee pie. Just the cake, if it has too much cake to filling, it becomes a little cumbersome for me.
It definitely has to be just right. But researching this, Chuck, it made me wonder if Oreos were meant to be like kind of some sort of manufactured whoopee pie.
Maybe. I will say this. The only Oreo worth eating is the double stuff.
Do you like the golden kind or the chocolate kind or both?
Nah, I don't try the variations. I like the regular.
Okay.
What about you?
I like them pretty much all. There's only been a couple of weird Oreos that I was like, nah, not this one.
Okay. Because there's all kinds of crazy flavors now, right?
Yeah. The birthday cake and the Rice Krispie Treat Oreos were pretty great.
The birthday cake thing has infested every area of the sweet realm.
Yeah. For good reason, though. I mean, you get some frosting in there. Well, that's pretty much it. That's an excuse to put frosting in something that wasn't otherwise there.
Oh, I want a cookie so bad.
Or in the case of an Oreo, you're putting frosting inside of frosting, and that is amazing.
I got something else here. I know we got a few more little tidbits. Mm-hmm. Cookie dough. I tried to find out sort of the rise of eating cookie dough and it becoming a thing, and no one really knows when it started to be a big thing. I mean, they think nostalgia obviously has a big part in it with licking the batter off the mixing things. Uh-huh. But they said that this new generation, like Gen Z, has taken it to a new level. And they, in college towns, cookie dough is triple in sales what it is in a regular town, partially because dorms don't have ovens, but partially because the younger generation just eats this stuff up.
Yeah, there's
and this is all safe to eat now. Right. I know everyone thinks it's eggs, but it's usually the flour that causes problems.
What?
Yeah. It's bacteria in the flour. And so they said salmonella in eggs is really, if you take care of your eggs, it's really not much of a problem.
Yeah, most eggs are pasteurized now.
Yeah, well, that too. But like if you buy the cookie dough that you're allowed to eat in the grocery store, mm-hmm. like just right out of the thing, mm-hmm. like cookie dough for eating, it has got treated flour. It's called heat-treated flour.
That sounds healthy.
Which means, yeah, they just bring the flour up to about 165 degrees Fahrenheit for a little while, and then that like, takes care of any bacteria, and then you can just eat cookie dough like it's going out of style.
Crazy. I did not know that. Thank you for that one, man. That's a fact of the podcast right there.
And the cookie dough ice cream that started in 1984 by Ben and Jerry's in their Vermont Scoop Shop.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
Apparently, it was an anonymous suggestion on their suggestion board.
Oh,
in
really?
The shop. Yeah.
Man, that was nice.
So somebody really lost out on some big royalties.
They left another anonymous suggestion saying, can I have a little bit of money for my idea?
You got some other good facts here, don't you?
Yeah. Best-selling cookie in the world, Chuck, what is it?
Oh, geez. I don't know.
Oreo.
Oh, is it Oreo?
It is, or at least in 2014, the latest I could find was. But I think that bears reminding, I know we've talked about it before, that Oreo's actually the knockoff, that Hydrox was the original, and Oreo came along and knocked off Hydrox and then became the greatest selling cookie in the world.
Oh, that's right.
I love that story.
I like this bit you have on Famous Amos, too, the very famous Amos cookies. Mm-hmm. I don't think I knew this. Wally Amos was an agent, the first African-American agent at the William Morris Agency. Mm-hmm. And he would bake these cookies to give his acts to be like, hey, how about some cookies? You want to stay with me, right?
Right.
And they were really popular and he spun it off and founded his own company.
Yes. And then I got one more, Chuck. People leave cookies out for Santa, right?
Sure.
You'd think that'd be pretty old. But actually, apparently, they've traced it back to the Great Depression in America.
Santa cookies?
Yeah, that they were teaching kids to show gratitude and appreciation for the gifts that they were getting. And that was some parents started that, and that was where kids started leaving cookies out for Santa. That's what I saw. I saw it in multiple places.
Yeah, at a very unlikely time. That's very nice.
Yeah. So that's it for cookies, everybody. I think the only thing left to do is to go eat some cookies. I wouldn't blame
you. Oh, man, do you know how many people are going to bake cookies tonight?
That's great. That was kind of the point. I wanted everybody to bake. And I also want to shout out some of our sources, The Nibble, What's Cooking America, and many, many, many others.
Yum.
And since I said many, many, many others and Chuck said yum, that means it's time for listener mail.
Well, what it's time for is to talk about Sketchfest.
Okay.
Because we're returning to the live stage, everybody. And we want to see you. It's a vaccinated-only show. It is a masked show. We're going to do it as safely as possible. And this is on January 21st at the best comedy festival in the land.
Yeah, we'll be at the Sydney Goldstein Theater. And you can get tickets at sfsketchfest.com. And it'll be the first time in 2 years that we will have been on stage. So it's going to be fun to see for you guys one way or another, whether we bomb or not.
That's, well, no, we'll be great. It'll be a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to it. I really miss getting on stage. So this is going to be great.
So we'll see you guys January 21st, 2022. And Chuck, speaking of 2022, this is our last regular episode of 2021. So first, I want to wish my dear sweet wife, Yumi, very, very happy birthday today. She actually, I said, hey, which would you rather know more about, contortionists or cookies? And she said cookies. So I dedicated this episode to her. And I think we should wish everybody out there a very, very happy new year in the hopes that 2022 is a really, really great year, don't you?
That's right. Thanks for all the support, not only this year, but over all the years that allow us to have one of the best jobs in the world. It means everything to us, and y'all mean everything to us. And so thanks a lot. I hope you had a great, or at least a better 2021 than 2020, and maybe things will be even better next year.
Yeah. If you want to get in touch with us to tell us how great your New Year's Eve was, you can send it in an email to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey everybody, are you thirsty? Well, sip on pure, refreshing Richard's Rainwater. Yes, it's really rain, caught clean before it hits the ground. Rain is naturally pure, so there's no need for harsh chemicals or additives. Richard's Rainwater contains no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing. Enjoy the smooth, clean taste of Richard's still rainwater or the long-lasting and cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. Sip the sky. In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com. In business, first impressions are everything. And that's why every business owner needs to know about Ruby. Ruby is the virtual receptionist company who screens, transfers, and takes messages 24/7, all while making your customers feel special. You definitely don't want to hire a subpar front desk person. And with Ruby, they engage with your callers in a conversational way, just like your best employee would. Never miss another customer call again. This year, make your business the best it can be. Visit ruby.com today. Or just call them at 844-900-RUBY. The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.